We're taking the pulse on independent pharmacies here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The hallmark of a corner pharmacy is that you know the pharmacist, right, by name, and they know you. There's that trust relationship, and that can be perhaps a big boost for customer service and satisfaction. But mega mergers among national corporations could disrupt the $453 billion retail pharmacy industry. Do you work for an independent pharmacy? What is that experience like? Do you rely on an independent pharmacy in your community for your meds? Do you know your pharmacist? We're at 800-642-1234. Don Anderson is president and CEO of Independent Pharmacy Cooperative. That's a purchasing organization for independent pharmacies with more than 6,000 members, and it's based in Sun Prairie. Don, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you, Kate.
So break it down for us. What's the difference between independent pharmacies and chain pharmacies?
Well, you know, I think you hit it on the head in your opening there with the customer service angle. Independent pharmacies all across the country for years have been known for the customer service. When you walk into an independent pharmacy, the pharmacist knows you, they know your family, they know your kids. But when you go to a chain pharmacy, in many cases, you're just another number. You're going in to pick up your prescription. So that probably is the number one standout for them.
But there are some numerical qualifiers, are there not?
Possibly, if you're talking about the number of pharmacies.
Yeah.
Independent pharmacies.
Sure.
Reality is, you know, most people, what happens today is in communities, people are seeing independent pharmacies that have been there for years, sometimes 100 years, closing down, or they're selling out to one of the chains. Reality is, though, what people don't realize, there's 22,000 independent pharmacies across the country. So if you take the top three chains, CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid, and total those up, it is almost an identical number across the country. But what's happening is in some of the communities, the challenges that independents are being faced, they don't have a choice but to partner or sell out. But in Wisconsin, we still have 285 independent pharmacies across the state.
Well, prior to your work as head of the Independent Pharmacy Cooperative, you worked for the Long's drugs chain. What led you into the independent world?
Actually, Long's, you're right, was the fourth largest chain in the country, and they were acquired by one of the other chains at the time. I had worked with independents in the past on another side of the business, and trying to make the move over to independence for me was a real easy one because it was all about having that local feel and being in the communities and really wanting to be part of a pharmacy industry that was concerned about the health and the health care of patients. You know, independents want to be a healthcare destination is really their focus. And that's a number of different things from, you know, immunizations and travel vaccines, compounding, and diabetic screenings, lab tests. They truly are. These pharmacists are healthcare providers, but yet they're not recognized as healthcare providers by some of the insurance companies. And their concern is really about the overall healthcare of their patients.
We're talking with Don Anderson. He's head of the Independent Pharmacy Cooperative, which is based in Sun Prairie. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you work for an independent pharmacy. What is that experience like? Do you rely on an independent pharmacy in your community for your meds? And what else does it do for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Don, you've touched on a bit of the challenges that independent pharmacies face, consolidation being one of them. But what has the internet brought to pharmacies and the online retail world?
From a pharmacy standpoint, I honestly don't believe that the internet has had a huge impact on the pharmacy side from a prescription standpoint. It's probably had more of an impact on the front end of the store. You know, there's so much you can buy online, which is about everything. It's delivered right to your home. But what's happening is you're seeing stores now figuring out how to address that challenge. And most of the successful independents out there have created websites that you can order online. Things are delivered to your home. So they're combating that piece. Many people just think that you're going to go to an independent and you're going to pay more money for something. And that's not the case. They're figuring out how to market their services, how to address the online challenges. The biggest challenge for them is really about the reimbursement. It's about what they're getting paid. You know, these pharmacies don't set the price that they're going to charge for, say, a prescription. That is set by someone else. It's one of the only businesses out there that the someone else gets to tell you how much you're going to actually charge for your service or product. And that's probably the number one challenge for them right now.
And so with your cooperative, when you pool thousands upon thousands of pharmacies together, how does that give you more leverage?
What we're able to do as a buying group is we're able to go out and once we consolidate all of their purchases, we're able to go out and negotiate contracts on their behalf. So it brings better pricing for them on the buy side. It gives them the ability to compete with the chains. When you have the chains that have 8,000 or 9,000 stores, they're able to go out and negotiate pricing for that. An independent, even if they are a multi-store owner that might own 10, 12, 20 stores, they don't have the buying power with that number of stores that a chain has with 8,000 or 9,000. So we're able to do that for them.
What is the perception of independent pharmacies among those people entering the profession? Are new pharmacists interested in being independent?
Absolutely. And that has been for a number of years, and it has increased, I think, even more. So much so that for us, what IPC has done, we actually work with students in pharmacy schools all over the country. A few years ago, as an example, we put together an endowment at Northeast Ohio Medical College. They have a program at that pharmacy school where it's a collaborative medicine approach. So they have medical students and pharmacy students working together. Just recently, we put together a program with MCW Pharmacy School over in Milwaukee, where we are funding a program over there for residencies in independence. And it's getting students out there. But when we talk to students now, I mean, at least half of them want to get into independent pharmacy.
Are independent pharmacies able to meet the salaries that chains offer?
Well, salaries are going down all across the country for pharmacists. It's not what it used to be. All across the country, that's happening, even from a chain level. At a chain, for the chains right now, chains all across the country are typically changing their staffing models, and so they're reducing hours for pharmacists and technicians. As part of that, salaries are coming down, and for independents, now the salaries are going to be close to what they are, if not the same as in the chain world. But what's happening with the independents is they're really focused on that clinical aspect. I mean, these students coming out of school today are true clinicians. They have their doctor of pharmacy, they're true clinicians, they're focused on healthcare, and that's what independents are doing today, is really driving it that direction.
We're talking with Don Anderson, President and CEO of Independent Pharmacy Cooperative. He stays with us as we continue our look at independent pharmacies with a visit to a Milwaukee pharmacy that has deep roots in the community. What is the most important thing for you when you visit a pharmacy? Is it cost? Is it getting your questions answered? What do you need to be healthy? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're looking at independent pharmacies on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are more than 22,000 independent pharmacies across the country. Many of these pharmacies have deep roots in their local community. But in recent years, independent pharmacies have faced a number of big threats to viability. Do you rely on an independent pharmacy in your community for your meds? Why do you choose your pharmacy? Have you used both a chain and an independent one? Did you notice any differences? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Don Anderson of Independent Pharmacy Cooperative stays with us. And now let's welcome to the conversation Tamir Kalodi, who is president of Hyatt Pharmacy. That's a locally owned independent pharmacy with 10 locations in Metro Milwaukee, two others in southeastern Wisconsin. Tamir, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, walk us through what customers can expect, patients can expect if they use Hyatt Pharmacy. What services do you offer? What is your role in the community?
That's a great question. Our company was built upon going beyond just filling medications. We really try to create value for patients and personalized care, and we do that through a handful of differentiated services. So, for example, we deliver medications directly to people's homes, which is extremely valuable for people who are immobile or difficult to travel. We also offer different packaging solutions. So you can think of how many seniors you know that their son or daughter is putting in their medications into their pill box every month, every week, and it's quite a cumbersome process. We have services that will create unique packaging solutions so it's already done for them. We have a service where a licensed pharmacist will go directly to patients' homes, consult them in their home in a comfortable space, review all the medications they're on, look for any unique side effects, any interactions, see what are the barriers to really being adherent with the doctor's orders. We also are unique and lucky to have 20 different people who speak different languages who work as interpreters. So many times a language barrier is quite a problem, and we're lucky to be able to communicate in their native language. And those are just kind of some of the unique services that our company was built upon.
Right. So this is a pharmacy that where 20 different languages is spoken. Why does that matter?
Great question. Well, we oftentimes see people who come here from a different country who are still learning English, that don't understand or can't read labels in English. So we have people who can come to their home, speak their native language, see what the barriers are to taking their medications properly, or find out what a reason is that they're having unique side effects. So being able to communicate in their native language is really a unique value that patients really value and appreciate.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Chris joining us from Adams. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I'm too far away to even access this business anymore, but I just want to do a shout out for Community Pharmacy in Madison, which is just a fabulous place. Not only do they have a regular pharmacy that dispenses drugs, and they're very, very great pharmacists, but they have all kinds of supplements and herbal stuff. And the people who work there are very knowledgeable, and the business is really, really well run. It has profit sharing. People have been there for an amazing number of years. They've dedicated themselves to helping the community, and that's why it's called Community Pharmacy. And so I just want to say there are places out there that you can give your money to that are not your big box store.
Chris, thanks for the call. Don, what would you respond to there?
She is absolutely correct. I'm familiar with Community Pharmacy in downtown Madison, and that is exactly what pharmacies do, independents do, all over the country. The successful pharmacies look for that niche market, that niche that they can put their finger on and say, this is important in my community. Just like Tamir was saying, Hyatt does a lot of those things in their pharmacies. You know, everything from compounding and specialty medications. She's absolutely correct. That's how independents survive.
Tamer, how have independent pharmacies like Hyatt adapted over time? What changes have you had to face?
We have, over the course of Hyatt's life, the past 8 years, we've definitely been faced with numerous challenges, including decreased reimbursement and also the rise of the continual rise of the big box stores, chains, et cetera. So you may be familiar with Avis Rent-A-Car's slogan of the 1960s, we try harder because we're number two. We think independent pharmacy is number one, but we still try harder because we really care about the patients. And that that unique mindset really is what is able to allow us to really think outside the box, provide different services, allow us to adapt to these rising challenges.
Don, you mentioned salaries are going down for pharmacists, reimbursements really difficult. What do independent pharmacies need to succeed in the future?
A couple of things. We need to have a continued focus from a legislative standpoint, and local pharmacists are involved, actively involved from a legislative standpoint to make changes around the reimbursement. They need to continue to work as hard as we can to get them recognized as healthcare providers so they can begin being paid for the services they're providing. Every other healthcare provider out there, a physician, therapist, whatever it might be, are all paid for their services. And so it really comes down to advocating on their behalf to make sure that we are addressing the reimbursement issues from a federal and state level and getting these folks recognized for the 7, 8, 10 years of education that they have.
Tamer, how much are people driven by price versus relationship, price versus trust? If you shop around and you can find your prescription at a lower cost somewhere else, do you see people move around?
Yeah, that's a great question. And price is definitely important when making a decision about which pharmacy to go to. But oftentimes, patients don't know the real value that an independent pharmacy brings to the table until they come into the door. And offering a better price oftentimes will get them in the door. And then once they're in and they see this unique suite of services, they really say, well, we should have been here from day one. So like Don has mentioned, we strive to offer, independent pharmacies strive to offer definitely better prices compared to the bigger chains, big box stores, and it's something that we pride ourselves on doing.
Tamer, earlier we were talking about the 20 different languages that are spoken at your pharmacy. Do you find that in immigrant communities especially, there are some barriers we see in terms of accessing prescriptions and knowing the ramifications of prescriptions and what to do and how to shop for them or not? Is there a different level of perhaps complexity when it's a non-native speaker?
Oh, definitely. I mean, sometimes these are people who have never been in the United States before that come here to seek refuge, come here for a better life, and they have no idea what to do when needing a medication. They don't know how to get a prescription. They don't know how to go to a pharmacy, how to ask questions and really inquire about their concerns. So it's really critical for us that, especially our locations in areas where there's a higher immigrant population or refugee population, we always try to have people on staff that speak many different languages that allows that, that lowers that barrier.
Let's bring in Kathy in West Bend for just a moment. Kathy, short on time, what's on your mind?
An independent pharmacy in a community I used to live in saved my life, and I cannot give them a higher accolade than that. When they always asked, how are you doing? these people actually listened to my reply. They inquired further because it seemed to be something was wrong, and I thought I had just a bad case of flu. Turns out I had a very bad reaction to a drug I was prescribed.
And you're still with your independent pharmacy.
Unfortunately, I no longer live in Maquoketa, but Miller Pharmacy in Maquoketa, I can't tell you how much I appreciate their efforts.
Well, Kathy, thank you for your time. We're going to have to leave it right there. Don Anderson is president and CEO of Independent Pharmacy Cooperative. That's in Sun Prairie. We also were joined by Tamer Kaloti, who is president of Hyatt Pharmacy, which has 10 locations in metro Milwaukee, two others in southeastern Wisconsin. Coming up, we're going to look at the 52nd Annual Governor's Conference on Emergency Management and Homeland Security getting underway today in the Dells. You're with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about emergency response here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hundreds of people from emergency management and fire and law enforcement, homeland security, first responder agencies, they're all meeting in the Dells today and tomorrow. It is the Governor's Conference on Emergency Management and Homeland Security. And we thought this is a good time to check in on emergency coordination in the state, especially in light of all of the flooding. Where do our Wisconsin agencies shine in disasters? Where are there gaps in coordination? You can join in at any point here at 800-642-1234. What disaster have you gone through in Wisconsin? What was done by emergency teams to overcome it in your community? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Christopher Garrison is fire chief of the Sun Prairie Fire Department. Chief Garrison, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So there's been such severe flooding around the state in the past few weeks, not in Sun Prairie, but the Sun Prairie Fire Department has still been responding. How did your department help with efforts around the state?
Well, we have here in Dane County, we're part of MABUS Division 115. MABUS is a special system set up. It actually started in Illinois, and I believe now it's in 32 states throughout the, and don't quote me on that number, but it's in numerous states throughout the country. And what MABUS is, it's called the Mutual Aid Box Alarm Systems. So what that does is it gives our dispatchers the ability to go to a certain card, which will say what departments are due to come in and help other departments. So what will happen is if a neighbor has a flooding situation, they have a big fire, they have a tornado, or they have that, they activate the MABUS alarm systems, and that sets off a tone for our dispatch, and they know how to get all the pertinent equipment and personnel to an emergency scene.
How often does that happen? How often do you get called up?
Well, I would say, you know, in the flooding situation, we haven't gotten, as I said, Sun Prairie is not affected by the floods. We've been very fortunate, but some of our neighbors are. So if our neighbors need assistance, they will call MABUS, and MABUS will get a hold of us. During the flooding in Mesomania, we were toned out, and we sent a squad with four people out there for, I believe it was 3 days in a row that we had personnel out there assisting them with moving residents and protecting property and infrastructure.
And fire departments do a lot more than just putting out fires, as we see in our brains and as we, you know, can you tell us more about that work, and has it always been that way?
Fire departments are no longer the traditional fire departments that they used to be. If you take a look at if it's a police activity or if it's an EMS activity, those specific entities are called. But with every other disaster, it seems that people lean on the fire department. And unfortunately, as a fire department, we we struggle when we just use our name, because that's not what we are. We're more of an all hazards response team. We do, yes, go to structure fires, and that's one of the big things that we train for. But going back to what else we do, we respond to car accidents. We assist on emergency medical responses with the ambulance. If a town has a tornado, we respond to that. If there's a gas leak, we respond to that. If there's a carbon monoxide leak, we respond to that. If there's an electrical hazard, we respond to that. Traditional fire departments have really been putting themselves in a one-way position, trying to define their needs and their financial needs by calling themselves fire departments. And I'll tell you, if I had my choice and a bunch of my firefighters wouldn't whoop on me, I would change our name to an all-hazards response team. And that's what we are.
An all-hazards response team. We're talking with Fire Chief Christopher Garrison of the Sun Prairie Fire Department. He's one of the presenters at the Governor's Conference on Emergency Management and Homeland Security that's underway today and tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you an employee of an emergency management organization? What should the community know about your duties and what you're trained to do, what you respond to? How do you prioritize disasters, and what should change? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's look a little bit more about response to disasters and coordination. How important is coordination with other organizations, other governmental departments when disaster strikes?
Well, I can tell you, we are very fortunate here in Sun Prairie. We have a fantastic relationship with our police department. We have a fantastic relationship with our EMS department, and we have a fantastic relationship with our building department. We've actually formed a team that contains all four of those entities. So we have a process where we meet constantly. We also meet with our representatives from our council, and we have formed that team, and it has made us respond better to all types of emergencies. When we have a bomb threat here in Sun Prairie, which happens every once in a while, we probably had three or four in the last year or so. That's a police incident. But what happens is fire and EMS have to respond also. So we get together, coordinate, and between myself, Brian Goff, who's the EMS chief, and Chief Pat Anholt, who's the police chief, we coordinate our command system that we work together, and we're able to use each other's personnel to make this system run better. The Sun Prairie Fire Department is very fortunate that our council has recognized some of these needs as far as emergency management and has been gracious enough to purchase us a great command vehicle. Now, that command vehicle facilitates our needs right here in Sun Prairie, but if we get a large event, we also activate our EOC, our Emergency Operations Center, at our City Hall, and we also expand out to Dane County Emergency Center, who has different types of facilities as an event escalates that we can bring in some of their equipment, like their large communications van, which we used last year in July when we had our incident here in Sun Prairie in July. There's so many different resources. And as I said, these are all activated by one call on a radio to our dispatch center, who allocates all the resources that we need for them. We just need to tell them what level we go. Boxes, when you see a first alarm fire or a second alarm fire, that's all determined by one call over a radio that activates all of these different things for us. When we had our incident here, we went to a third alarm box, which if you take a look at that card, there's a specific card that lists probably 60 or 70 different needs that we have, and those all are put into play when that call is made.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Josh joining us from Greenfield. Hi, Josh.
Hi, yeah. So I think it's an important topic, and I figured I'd share. I work in the storm restoration company or the industry there, and I figured that it'd be some pertinent information for your listeners to. I mean, so many issues with flooding, or we had such cold winter in a few times with that polar vortex, pipe bursts or ice damming issues. even wind or hail, if you ever experience things like that or a branch and you're getting ready to file a claim with your insurance, it's very important to take as many photos as you can to keep track of all your receipts. And if you're having any trouble with your insurance company trying to get them to pay the full obligation or get the entire thing paid for, it's going to be a wise thing to go try and find a public adjuster that can help to represent you and guide you through that insurance process, which can be pretty complicated and drawn out and can lead to a lot of unexpected consequences if you aren't able to clean up the damages in time or keep track of everything throughout the process.
Josh, thanks for the call. And Josh is bringing up one other layer of a response resource, a storm restoration. Christopher Garrison, how do we deal with these other layers and not the immediate need of getting people out of a situation?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. The very first thing that people need to do is communicate with their insurance companies and let them know what happened. When we have a fire that causes a lot of damage, we ask them to immediately contact their insurance company, follow up, get the reports. Your fire departments have reports that you can get from them. Your fire or police departments or EMS departments have reports and do the follow-up. And, yeah, you need to take care of yourself, but you don't have that insurance and make sure you're covered.
Well, when you look at how you scale your response, you're talking about the third alarm box and the litany of needs when a response rises to that level. How do you scale your response as you are reacting in the situation, or do you have to figure that out very early on at dispatch level?
Well, you know, we are trained as firefighters and emergency responders to start sizing up as soon as we get the call. As I said, those resources are so readily available. And one of the things that I work with my officers are, you know, you can't think about where the situation is. You got to think of where the situation is going. We do a lot of training throughout our city. I mean, Sun Prairie is such a rapidly growing city, so rapidly, probably the most rapidly growing city in Wisconsin. I'm not completely sure of that. But it's important for a emergency service personnel to understand their community, to know their community and know what the infrastructure is. If you take a look at the infrastructure of our downtown, it's 140 years old. If you take a look at our west side, it's all very brand new. So you have different kind of threats in an older infrastructure than you do in a newer. You have different types of construction today than you had 20 years ago, which brings in so many different problems for your emergency response. So what I try and teach anybody who I deal with, who up-and-coming people in the fire service and up-and-coming officers, you have to start thinking of where the situation goes. And that starts with your training and training to understand your community. An important training tool for especially my volunteers and my full-time firefighters is to, you know, once a month, get in that engine and drive around and go look at the brand new construction, see how things are being built.
We have to pause right there with Sun Prairie's Fire Chief Christopher Garrison at our side. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back to the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're checking in on how emergency coordination is doing here in Wisconsin. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at flood disaster recovery. We're looking at emergency relief, how communities respond when disaster strikes. As hundreds of emergency responders meet for their annual conference today and tomorrow, we're wondering, how is disaster management doing here? Sun Prairie's Fire Chief Christopher Garrison stays with us. He's one of the conference presenters, and his session tomorrow will look at the response to a gas leak explosion in downtown Sun Prairie that killed one person and destroyed multiple buildings last year. You can join at any point in the conversation at 800-642-1234 as we look at community disaster preparedness. Let's go back to the phones now with Tony joining us from Egg Harbor. Hi, Tony. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good morning, Chris. I'm a former trustee in a rural fire department, and I always didn't understand why we billed the patients for EMS service when the ambulance was funded by the tax levy. And if we're billing the patient for that, why aren't we billing the patient to put out the fire in their house, and this crew never see a day where EMF service will be a right and not a cost.
Tony, thanks for the call. Fire Chief, can you respond to that about EMS service and how we go about paying for that?
Well, the only thing fire departments are actually ever deemed to do is investigate the fires. That is my number one call that I have to do in regards to any fire response. There are different ways out there to charge for those types of response, but the way that we are governed and taxed, all of our money comes through tax dollars to pay the fire department. So if they're paying the tax dollars, the services, that's what covers them. That's what it's for. I don't disagree with his thought that that's some creative out of the box thinking, but taxpayers are covered for fire protection under their taxes. So we feel comfortable with that here in Sun Prairie.
Chief Garrison, I want to return to last summer and the focus of your presentation tomorrow, the gas leak explosion that happened in your community. As you are now months removed from that, what is on your mind? How did the fire department respond? And have you made some changes?
Well, and this wasn't just the fire department response. We have to understand that this was fire. This was police. This was EMS. This was even our public works who stepped up to the cause. This incident causes a big struggle for our organization. We as a fire and public safety entity, along with the police and everything, we responded to a situation which people respond to every day, gas leaks. It's very common. I've probably been to 300 in my career, and these situations very seldom they go wrong. Unfortunately, this was a different event. And Sun Prairie Fire, Police, EMS, and the rest of the city response team responded so gallantly and so well to this incident. And we evacuated over 250 people in a very, very short amount of time. This was a very, very successful response. I don't think it really, when I sit back and review the situation, as tragic as it was, I don't know what we could have done different at this point. We have looked at all angles of the situation, and we've talked about it numerous times. Our response was amazing, and it's because of the teamwork of all the public safety personnel. The issue is we had a tragedy at the end of the day. All I can say in regards to what happened is we have had so much grief within our organization losing an amazing man like Captain Barr. But the issue is that Captain Barr and all of us have signed up for this job, and it is our duty to put ourselves in front of the safety, to cover the safety of the residents of our community. And all I can say is we're fortunate today that it wasn't 20 times worse than what we had. Go ahead.
What tips would you give to communities to pull off a very efficient, effective evacuation? Because evacuation was pivotal here. Seconds counted.
Absolutely. And I can tell you right now, I've already hit on it. It's the teamwork between the police and the fire department in that incident. I had an amazing police sergeant, Ray Thompson, who him and I and the shift commander of that day met, and we set up perimeters to start the evacuation process, and we started moving systematically through that. And going back to your question, it's the teamwork within your public safety entities. If you don't have that, if you don't have the ability to work with your police, your EMS, and your public works, you're going to fail. And that's where it all starts with Sun Prairie.
How often must you practice that coordination and make sure everyone is on the same page? How important is going through the practices and the drills?
Well, it's very important, and we work quite a bit with the police department. And the big key thing right now is what's going on with the active threat issues. So we train fire, police, EMS, and the city. We train continuously together. So last year we probably got together with police, fire, and EMS about four or five times where it was in, you know, where all of us responded together. I mean, we have so much different training that we have to do individually, but I guarantee you that's probably more than most communities, but that's the issue. The other great thing is the trust that the police have in us and we as fire have in the police, which was never done in the past. I go and teach at the annual trainings for the police departments every year. We talk about a different type of emergency. Last year it was proper police response to fire emergencies. This year I'm in the middle of teaching the police the best response to gas emergencies because it's pertinent in our situation. But going back to it, it's all the teamwork. So honestly, we're training constantly and we're exchanging things with police and fire, with police and EMS and the city constantly.
When you have hundreds of people pulled together at the governor's conference, as you do now with from so many different agencies, when everyone is together like that, what do you collectively grapple with?
Well, you know, I don't know if we grapple with anything. It's a lot of great networking. You know, I'll be honest with you, for the first time at a conference a couple of weeks ago, I got up and spoke about this issue because the investigation was over and I refused to speak about it until the investigation was over. Once that is, it's really important within the police and fire service, no matter how hard it is, to discuss the event and work on ways to help others. And that's what we're doing as a department now. We're sharing what we can and what we did, the good things and some of the things that we could work on improving to move that. Going back to your earliest question, you know, the biggest problem we had was with our infrastructure and a lot of gaps in the city allowed residents to start walking into our hot zone while we were dealing with this issue. There's no way we could have enough people to cover that event, and that's why it ended up being tragic.
As we close here, if Wisconsin could improve in one way on disaster response and recovery, what would be that one area we could bring up?
Oh, well, this one's probably going to get me in trouble, but I think it all revolves around egos, to be honest with you. We at every level, at the government level, at the fire chief level, at the police chief level, we have to understand that we all have to work together as a team. And we can't get on the scene and say, hey, this is a fire department incident. Other people aren't. We need to work together with our police, our fire, our EMS, our government representatives, the people who own the purse string. We have to educate all groups about what's best for the residents. And I think sometimes fire departments keep to themselves and they don't work really well with other entities. Police departments in some situations do the same things. EMS departments, the same things. You know, we need to realize that we're all on the same team and we need to start working more together as a for the common good of the resident. I'm not saying that this is widespread, but I think that once we realize that we're all in the same business and we're all in it together, we're going to do better things. And I see great things here in Sun Prairie going in that direction.
Chief Garrison, thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Christopher Garrison is fire chief of the Sun Prairie Fire Department. Just ahead, haven't taken a look at your 401k in years. You're not alone. We'll dive into research finding that people tend to avoid financial decisions. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network.